Hello, you're listening to Third Waves.
Third is a platform that amplifies underrepresented voices through print, events, and on the airwaves. You're joined by me, Tribe, DJ, and radio host.
Me, Daniela, writer, musician, and producer.
And myself, Rona, stylist, founder, and editor-in-chief of Third.
This episode is the first of a series with my Niger sisters.
And in it, the lovely Rona is joined by friends who all share Nigerian heritage but are from the UK or live here. On this episode, Chloe, Tribe, Palumi and Rona talk about Nigerian culture and how it is making its mark on the world's stage.
So throughout my life, I've always had this nerdy interest in discovering things about Nigeria. And I can trace this back to when I was in school and I used to like devour the books of Chinua Achebe, Chimamanda Adichie. And I think a big thing about that for me was being able to access a bit of my culture. I think Nigerian culture is definitely having a moment right now. It feels like it's blowing up. And this podcast with my Niger sisters is really an opportunity to be able to talk about how we're experiencing this moment as Nigerians, as people from the continent and with roots to the continent. And just to sort of record how we're experiencing this and our hopes for it as well. So I'm joined here by some lovely guests. I'd love you all to introduce yourselves.
I am Tribe, I am Nigerian, and I am a DJ and radio host, producer, presenter, all of that. And my group is Yoruba.
Hi, I'm Chloe Falani. I'm Yoruba and Ishan. I've like got more into it being like my Ishan side, which is my mother's side. I'm a poet, artist, performance artist, sometimes model, workshop facilitator, community organizer.
Hi, I'm Palumi, Oluwa Palumi, if you had to get the full name. Tribe Yoruba as well. Born in Lagos, grew up in London, and I travel. I create travel content around the world.
And I, of course, am Rona. I am the founder of Third Magazine, also a stylist. I'm Igbo, and yeah, I'm your host for today. So just to kickstart, I know you actually just said it there, Palumi, but do any of us have... names from our cultures? If so, what are they and what do they mean?
Oluwa Palumi, that means God is with me. So very powerful. And I think it gives me a very weird level of confidence of being an explorer. It's just that kind of backing or having somebody with you all the time, even though I do a lot of solo travels. That's what it means. I have a whole lot of name I don't know because they give you like 20 names when you're giving birth to. But yeah, Oluwa Palumi.
My middle name, Niger name, is Ayodeji. So it's like second joy or joy or number two, which is kind of weird because I always imagine like weird things in life where I'm like, am I always the second in this moment? But yeah, I try not to like hold too much on that, but think more on the idea of joy and like how to live in joy. So yeah.
My name is Temi Tope. I actually don't know what it means. It's quite many people are called Temi, many people are called Tope. I've never inquired which of them until you've asked that question, because obviously my first name, I know, you know, it translates to victory, so that's easy. One I would say, but my surname, which I'm not gonna give out, but it means from my mother's wealth, I've been told, which I've always thought was quite powerful. Yeah,
Temi Tope, I'll say, translates to I'm worthy to be, in the sense of mostly it's always God related. So mm-hmm. God is worthy to be worshipped.
Oh, so okay.
Like my situation, what I own is worthy for God to be worshipped concerned.
Oh, yeah.
So it's almost like your parents probably were giving thanks to God for having you.
Oh,
so
I like that. Yeah. Oh, thank you very much. Yeah.
See, these are the beautiful things that can happen when you have a native Nigerian at the table.
Yeah. Learning.
My Igbo name's actually Choma, which actually translates to God is good. But my mum always told me it meant lucky, which for me always made me feel like, you know, just quite a lucky child growing up, to be honest with you. So I thought it'd be nice to start off there, just because I think Nigerian names are so strong. Yeah. Like, yeah. They have so much intentionality to them. And I think it was just really lovely hearing around the room how all of you, like, if you knew your name, you've actually really reflected up on it. Do you know what I mean? And you've taken something from it, which is just a beautiful place to start off. Obviously, this episode is about Nigerian culture. One of the things I'd love to reflect on is the things that we were supposed to growing up and how that's affected how we saw ourselves as Nigerian. For people who maybe were like, obviously, Pelumi, you grew up in Nigeria, but I grew up in Britain, but I always knew I was Nigerian. So I almost wanted to think about the things collectively that we were exposed to that made us aware we were Nigerian.
I was very aware I was Nigerian moving to the UK. I think Nigeria, you're who you are. I moved here when I was 10 years old, so year six, and I was made aware. I think, you know, got fresh off the boat and fob and bleak and everything you can ever imagine. So there was definitely that awareness that, okay, I'm in a foreign land and there are people that look like me, but they just, you know, I sounded different, I acted different, the weather was horrible to me. So it was a whole lot of layering. But yeah, I think that awareness came from me literally relocating and being made aware. And people were like, okay, you're strange. Who are you and why do you talk like that? I don't know when you guys realized.
For me, I felt like there was different moments. So I would say at church when my mom was trying to get us to, and we went to Roman Catholic Church, trying to get us to wear traditional clothes and not fully understanding why, but not wanting to wear it because we would stand out. Sometimes we would be forced to wear it, but that kind of recognition of we want to blend in because we are different, I think underneath, I think that was there. I would also say there was a level of like community. So as a child, I'd go with my dad, me and my brother, and my older siblings to like various like parties and gatherings and community events, uncles and aunties. There would always be like jollof rice, super malt and things like that. And it was just, and without necessarily going, this is a Nigerian thing, it just felt like us thing, you know. And that would be like almost every other week, it would be a different person's house and we'd just be hanging out. So I think from an early age, it was community. But I think once we got into secondary school, and maybe you might have felt this, Rona, the secondary school that we went to had so many, and I appreciate it now kind of looking back, so many different ethnic I don't know, like regional or, you know, different groups of people in our own class, let alone across our year group. So there was quite a few people who were Nigerian who would be like, I'm Igbo, and constantly be like, but you're Yoruba, and make it into a whole thing. And I'll be like, yeah, I am Yoruba. Like, what is it? Okay. Like, yeah, exactly. And then there'll be people from Sudan, like, but I'm Sudan, or I'm from Ghana. And like, or there'll be one girl who'd be like, I'm from Benin. Like, it was just like, you know, that whole kind of like, comparing and being aware of, you know, this is how they identify and how they you know, they show up to the classroom. So I think it made me become more self-aware of like, okay, well, I'm Nigerian. What does that mean to be Nigerian? How does that relate to other people? How does that relate to other Africans in the classroom or across the year group? So I think those were kind of stepping stones of kind of taking in the fact that I'm Nigerian in a British country, you know.
I kind of second that, especially with the community aspect. So I think I'll go to more of a like what kind of made me really aware in a sort of like media visual landscape. And I think it was watching Nollywood films at my cousin's house. And also how dramatic, but also how bad the CGI was. and there's always this like play on like witchcraft and like adultery. And it was like, is this appropriate for children to be watching? I think I was really aware of like how sort of Nollywood cinema, and especially we're watching the 90s things on like tapes, like my age. they're not as glossy as they are now, like back then it was very, there was a very distinct Nigerian aspect about them. Like I don't think I even like see old tapes of like, I don't know, South African or other sort of like African film or cinema that had that same sort of like landscape or like themes and like conversations happening in it, like cinematography.
Yeah, Nollywood definitely came into it for me too. But I think it was also like my mum's friendship group, if you know what I mean? Like even in my school, like my primary school, I had many different groups of friends. But the ones that I had that were Nigerian and my mum was also friends with, if you know what I mean, like they all kind of just did the same things. My mum was usually closer to them. And when you'd have like those cousins who weren't really your cousins, that sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it'd be like, you know, there would just be like certain things you would do before you go to the house, like go and buy like sweets or like popcorn with peanuts and stuff like that, or just expect. And that really just reminded me that I was, or let me know that I was Nigerian, do you know?
I agree. Like, it just reminds me, do you know what's when you're expected to kneel, you know, like in front of an elder or an auntie or an uncle, and like, you know, you're not doing that outside of these circumstances, but it's expected of you, but it's because you are Nigerian and this is part of the culture and this is what, you know, yeah.
Exactly. What things that have been part of Nigerian culture do we love or have?
I can't imagine being anything but Nigerian, honestly. Like, it's just the way of life, the food, the music, the culture, the thinking, the hustle, there's so much about being Nigerian. Like, I've been to a lot of places around the world and I just keep being dragged back home because just everything, there's just, I honestly genuinely can, the way we relate to each other, the like the community that you explain, yes, everyone has their community, but there's almost like this brotherhood, like everyone's your auntie and everyone is your auntie. I remember, like, you know, Grucey, so I was like, is that your, it's like, yeah, she's my auntie. But yeah, there's too much to even start, you know, breaking down. But being Nigerian is just, It's the best feeling. It's honestly the best feeling in the world. Like, I wouldn't trade it. Like, I intentionally sometimes change my accent to sound more Nigerian. And like, there's just that pride and that ownership of, I am from this place. And yes, we can talk about the other side of the coin. But yeah, I think heavy on the positive side, there's a joy of being Nigerian. Absolutely. I don't know if you guys feel the same, but...
I think for me, the thing that makes me very proud of being Nigerian is Nigerian music.
Oh, yeah.
It just translates to the whole world. The very fact that, like, some of the biggest artists in the world right now, like, especially in terms of black music, are Nigerians, it just shows that there's something about our culture that speaks volumes and hits the hearts of people wherever they're from, let alone from within Nigeria. And the fact that as a DJ as well, that I can play this music and people like, I love this song, you know. And even the offshoots, let's say even Afro Swing in the UK, hearing how they've also, like me, may have grown up in the UK, but have taken parts of the culture and made it into something that still translates and has like echoes of what they've picked up heritage-wise and into the music. I think there's something that makes me very proud, especially as a DJ.
Yeah.
Makes me proud.
I think music is definitely massive because everywhere now, in the malls, I was on the airline, Emirates, and I was like, is that Afro?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. Trust me.
It was just a moment of like, wow, like we did it.
Yeah, yeah, literally. Yeah, that's got to be a moment of pride.
Yeah. I'll say food as well. Food is like definitely a, like we were talking earlier about food and like food is culture. And so I think that's always been my way of like connecting back to the culture because I don't really speak Yoruba or Ishan or understand it that well. So like maintaining sort of like the food practices and especially the way the food practice is like, it's not about precisely having this like written down recipe, but sort of like, your grandma learned this and she did it this way. Then your mother learned this and she did it this way. It's the same thing, but they all tweak it for their thing. And so when you learn it, you now have to tweak it to make it yours, but you're still maintaining this like history. And like someone's jollof rice is going to be completely different from someone else's jollof rice, or egusi is going to be different from someone else, even if it's almost in the same household as well. So I love that about like the way we cook and the way the food is almost shared between generations. It's almost like constantly evolving the way Nigerians are constantly evolving. There's not this like, I think it's almost like when I think about tradition is, especially in the West, it's very stagnant and very still. But in Nigeria, I feel tradition's a constant moving thing. It's not a like stagnant and still thing. Like obviously there's staples that stay very similar, but like especially when you look at the food, it's constantly shifting and moving, especially for where you are.
That's so true. I think also, like, just thinking back to things my mother would say, she'd be like, this ingredient is secret. Like, this is my secret ingredient. Only I put this into my food. So, like, I think that's definitely, like, there's so much pride in our food and it being tasty and, like, you know, flavorful and all of that.
And very communal. I've noticed the food is very communal. It's not, it's hard to cook. Anytime when I was practicing, I could never make it in a small batch. It would always have to be like, okay, everyone's going to have to eat it, even if it tastes bad.
Yeah. For me, I definitely think fashion has definitely been something that's stuck out for me, just because the colours of Nigerian clothing, the embroidery, like, it's just so beautiful. I think about what I do now and I think about the fact that I was just exposed to, like, my mum just, like, you know, flexing out in these beautiful, you know, wrappers and blouses with a gele. I was so obsessed with the gele as well. I was just be like, there's this flat piece of material and then suddenly it's 3D and it's on your head and it kind of looks like a rose and it takes, and it's really hard to make. Do you know what I mean?
And they do it every Sunday.
Yeah. So, like, I think, you know, just as a symbol, Nigerian fashion has been very special to me, as well as the literature, just because, like I said, I'm a big reader. And so, like, even now as an adult, like, I've recently read a book by Buchi Emecheta and I was like, for days I was spiraling. I was like, now I feel like I understand things so much more. And, you know, calling people up and being like, so in Igbo culture. So yeah, that's been a big thing for me. Obviously with Nigerian culture blowing up, I know we mentioned music and I think it's really good to see how people are embracing Nigerian music and Nigerian artists are blowing up all over the world. And I don't feel like they feel like, you know, they're Nigerian artists, but they're not just big in Nigeria anymore. They're not just big in Africa anymore. They're kind of like global artists, which is good to see for sure. But I guess maybe with this, does a sense of gatekeeping come into it? Because I know sometimes, you know, some of these artists have done collaborations with bigger artists. How do we feel about that? Is there a need for these artists to make sure that they're authentic to Nigeria when they do this as well?
Yeah, I think it is important that Nigerians are behind the scenes making sure that every move that has been made and as much benefit can come back into the community. Unfortunately, some of the big artists that we know of are signed by certain labels and it's not necessarily going to impact or preserve the traditions and the cultures and where the music is coming from, and that's not necessarily a priority. I can understand why certain artists collaborate. So let's say Rima with Selena Gomez with Calm Down. And what was the one that everyone was upset about? Justin Bieber on Essence. Yeah. I mean, everyone straight up on socials was like, it's not needed. Mm. No. I understand, because in order to reach those peaks where they can, I think it was Burna Boy who sold out Madison Square Avenue, get to those levels, you do need to kind of collaborate and come across as a global pop artist. However, there is a level of, like, risk of losing the culture and the music and the sound through that process. And for me, it's hard, because I think what might go global might not be what people on the ground in Nigeria, in the streets of Lagos, are going to be listening to. And so that's another question. It's a conversation in itself. But for me, I think the important conversation is who's controlling it behind the scenes, and if that's going back into the community and making sure that the agenda and the motives are right. So at the moment, I don't think it is, and that's what I think needs to change. But if a pop artist wants to jump on a song that's buzzing in the top 10 in the US charts and it just needs that little push, fair enough, if they do it justice. And I think as long as we keep to the essence of what, let's say, Afrobeats is, or whatever genres are coming up, like, you know, it will resonate. So I kind of don't mind that kind of stuff, but the stuff behind the scenes are the stuff that I'm kind of like,
I love how diplomatic you are.
Yeah. as long as it sounds good. I'm not going to play it if it doesn't sound good. Like,
I'm big against it.
Yeah, fair.
I'm big. Like, especially when I think about things like disco and how, like, disco is a very predominantly Black, Latinx, and queer, like, sound that was created in New York and stuff. And when it got, like, pulled out of that and became super mainstream, that's when people, like, essentially, like, it became, like, shallow. Like, yeah. The sort of, the celebration of liberation that was happening, it was, like, you know, from the late 60s of, like, the movements and stuff, and people essentially, like, disco is almost like a time of, like, we have achieved something,
yeah.
And this is the sound of that moment, of that liberation, and I think when it became, like, you know, Star Wars having a disco theme, musical.
Burger King disco.
You know? And I think similar with Afrobeats, there's this, like, there's this, like, joyous energy of, like, Nigerian culture, yeah. And celebrating, like, I think there's still a lot of problems Nigeria has, but
yeah.
There's
yeah.
definitely, like, an energy of, like, celebration and joy. And I think when you take that out of the joy of, like, Nigerians, like, where you have Justin Bieber or Selena Gomez, it's like, what joy are you tapping in to create this sound, you know? What sort of energy?
Where's the joy?
You know?
Joy.
Yeah.
Not where is the joy?
And it's like, so I'm really, with that, I think when it becomes this really mainstream thing, I think Western is really good at, like, sort of sucking something out.
And co-opting.
You know? And so when it gets sucked dry to now, it's just like, oh, just upbeat sound.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, now it's like, where would it go? And I think that's the danger. I don't want it to, like, lose it, where, you know, how, like, dance hall and stuff became very popular, but it didn't hit that, like, mainstream white popular. And I think actually that was actually, even though some people say it's quite detrimental, I actually think it was quite good for it, because now when you have now Beanie Man and do that first battle, they're still themselves and they're still making a sound that is still, like, got the energy of the island. And it's like, I hope that a lot of Nigerian artists, like, move away from, like, doing all this collaboration, these, like, essentially artists that don't understand the sound, they don't understand the energy.
Yeah,
like, I would say, like, Beyonce at least did the work to, like, actually tap into what was that sound.
Yeah.
So, like, it didn't feel so off key. But I feel like a lot of these artists, they tap in, they're like, they don't even meet the artist.
Yeah.
They're just given the song and, like, do a thing in their own, like, studio in LA. Like, that doesn't make sense to me. Yeah. That's, like, really.
Have you heard about Afro Unz? Like, literally putting uns on Afrobeat.
I need to hear that. That's
honestly, it's like, Adekulego did it for one of his concerts, populated mostly white people, and they were just trying to add a bit more oomph, I guess. So it was literally that.
Did it work?
People were riled up. So.
Okay. I'm really...
I don't know if I was in the crowd, if I would have felt it, but I guess it's a very thin line, and it could go west quickly, but it's just, are we trying to, like, spread it? I think spreading requires a level of dilution, I guess, in some cases, you know, or palatability, which is what you really highlighted. And it's like, we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't make it palatable just for people to, is our music, why must we change? So, but then, you know, if people are a bit to appreciate it more because it has been translated in this manner, it is a big debate, I guess,
To go back to what you were saying before, I think bashment or dance hall is a very good example. So, like, if you were to go on the streets and ask people, you know, who's, like, a amazing or legendary bashment artist, they will probably say Beanie Man or Vybz Kartel. Mm. If you was to ask the general pop echelons, straight away Sean Paul. And if we go back to other genres, let's say the biggest selling disco album, I think it's Bee Gees.
Yeah.
But if you were to go to the roots and ask people what's the biggest selling disco album for, let's say, the Black community, it's actually Michael Jackson, Off the Wall. So it's going to mean different things to different people. Mm. So like David O, like maybe the most popular song for people, Nigerians, might be, what was it, Skelewu?
Skelewu, yeah,
or it might be If or something. Mm. But then if you was to ask people outside of that, it'll probably be one of the collaborations with Idris Elba or whatever. You know, like, I think it's going to mean different things to different people. And I think it's like about accepting that they're going to have to do what they got to do to balance out the bag. As long as they're not losing on the ground what
the essence of music is.
I think that question of almost like audience and taste is really relevant as well, because sometimes I think about like content creators. And you know, sometimes, especially I see a lot with dance, you will find like, you know, people who can do like, you know, traditional Afrobeat sort of Nigerian dance really, really well. And say someone who does it who is white. And sometimes people get resentful because they're like, oh, this white person is blowing up and they're kind of just as good as anyone else. He's doing it.
There's this guy on travel is going around Nigeria like, this is pure water. I'm like, are you doing it? Like, there's some amazing content creator. Like, why all of a sudden? Yeah, I'm sorry to call it that. That is so
frustrating, though. I agree. But I think that's the frustration for people is that sometimes once it's like almost made palatable, let's just call it that, then somehow it becomes more acceptable because it reaches another audience. And it's just like, well, why can't the original be appreciated just as it is? Like, why does it always have to be like, here is your entry drug? Do you know what I mean?
Also, I just want to add, I also think about the idea of evolution. And I think when music is maintained in its community, it's able to evolve in an authentic way. While when it's like broadened to this like, essentially whitewashed mainstream, you have obviously the music industry that will now focus on commerce rather than actually the evolution of the actual sound. So how can the sound can evolve? And the sound can evolve because if it was, if it only stays in that area of Nigerian folks, then we're going to see like, oh, we maybe get this new technology or someone's found this old like instrument or something. So it's like, that's how it could evolve. But if it's maintains on a mainstream, they're only going to think about what was successful 2 days ago and let's keep that sound going for the next 2 years and there's no actual evolution. It's only trying to make a hit after hit after hit.
It's true. I would also say that let's even use I'm a Piano or Afrobeats. It didn't come out of the vacuum of just Nigeria. Afrobeats is a good example of, you know, people growing up listening to African-American music, like R&B, listening to dancehall and bashment, as well as listening to traditional music and just kind of mushing that all together. So like, especially like if when I do a show on NTS called The High Life and Sunshine Show, and I often kind of make the connections in terms of the influences that even go into High Life, which you wouldn't even think about, brass band, European brass band with the early kind of, you know, and then even Mexican like playing. Like there's so many things that go into making a particular sound that happens outside of the culture that we're distinctly thinking of. I would also say with I'm a Piano, like gospel keyboard playing and choirs, you know, so all of that has outside influence. And I think that conversational dynamic will constantly keep going. But I think I'll tie it back to the fact that making sure the people behind the scenes have the best intention for the sound and the music and the people taking part in it, to make sure that it does have a level of authenticity to the community that is creating it.
That's a really good point. I've also just realized I forgot to ask you guys the fun question. So you're not getting off.
We need to bring the ice.
Yes. Let's do that.
I thought the first question was it.
So, what story or TV character best represents you and why?
Oh, wow.
In general or specific criteria?
In general, you could do.
Okay. I've been watching Bear. You know Bear. I do you know what? There's something about I can't even remember what her name is. The do you know the black woman?
Isn't she Nigerian? Ayo.
Yeah, I think she's Nigerian as well. I wouldn't say I'm fully her, but I relate to that personality. She's a bit like awkward. I wouldn't say I'm as driven.
I'll separate that part of her personality.
But I would say that I feel like she's one of the first TV characters I've seen where it shows a black person, a black woman being a bit more fully rounded and not really leaning into any of the tropes as the sassy or actually driven by genuine emotions that are happening around her and to her and participating in the environment. You know, that it's not necessarily just a trope. So I kind of feel quite connected to her. The fact that I can't remember her name says a lot, but still, that character.
I can't think of any.
I'm gonna go, so I don't know, anime wise Chihiro from Spirit Away, the main character, only because I always feel like I have such like youthful and childish heart. Like everyone's like, oh Chloe, you're always so young at heart, and I'm like, I'm actually grown. But I always feel like I always hold that dear to myself, and I think that character always, it felt like even they were put in this like really intense world, they maintained their like innocence and but also tried to like achieve what they needed to in that space, and I think I always do that. Kind of sounds quite Nigerian, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking maybe Insecure, maybe
what? Oh my gosh.
Like I'm kind of like in my business and just kind of minding my business.
I like that.
As little drama as possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, that TV, whole TV show and series was heavily like relatable.
I was actually gonna say Issa for myself. Yeah. I was like just working things out. Yeah. Just working things out.
I feel like Issa Rae is just like, when she said, what was it, I'm rooting for everyone black, I felt like every black person across the world was like, that right there, that right there.
Thank you all for being my amazing guests. Final question I'd love to ask you is, where can our listeners find you? What are your Instagram, Twitter X, whatever platforms you use, handles, please share with us now.
You can find me on mostly on Instagram. I like the visual aspect of things. And I'm as my name, Pelumi, P-E-L-U-M-I, full stop, N-U-B-I, my surname, Nubi. And on my website, www.pelumi.nubi.com.
Chloe Filani, you can find me on Instagram at 1.chloe.f.
And I am Tribe. Dot official, so that's Tribe spelt T-R-Y-B dot official, and you find my mixes and DJing and all that kind of stuff on there.
I loved how much you guys talked about music in that session. I mean, obviously Tribe, you're quite biased, that's your life to some degree, but yeah, it was really interesting. And I think I had to think about like cultural appropriation a lot during that discussion, and even more than cultural appropriation, just like, it kind of sounds quite trite, but how money dilutes stuff. And I thought that was like such a great point that was it Chloe who made that point that when money gets involved, that what makes music or innovation in any artistic form sparkle or spark is just people playing around, that sense of play, that sense of, yeah, unhindered experimentation, which comes from the love for the thing. Whereas when tracks, now talking about music specifically, it's being made to replicate something, then is a sort of entropy starts to set in, that you're just you're self-repeating or copying something over and over until it doesn't have anything left. And I found that to be such a poignant and strong point. And also, because sometimes I find what's quite difficult when people talk about, I think sometimes we can find it hard to access what the damage actually is when mainstream culture starts to appropriate certain things, or something gets picked up by a bigger artist or studio or whatever it might be, and they start using it. Because on some level you can be like, oh, it's cool that, you know, it's getting more like exposure or whatever, whatever. And like, to some degrees that's true. But yeah, to actually hone in on like the damage it has on the actual art form.
Yeah.
That was like very spine chilling to me.
That's actually quite an interesting point, especially as let's say Afrobeats as an example of an export of Nigerian culture is now seen as profitable. You know, like I remember when I was working at Universal, they mentioned how, I think it was either Sony or one of the big three had set up a headquarters in Nigeria because they had recognized the importance of Afrobeats and on the global market. And I think they had signed or they were looking into David O. So the fact that like
money, like you said, gets involved, and they, and once someone has a hit, they just want to keep replicating what will make the most financial kind of benefit to them. It ties back into, it reminds me of when people now, like you said, look retrospectively at the moment in hip hop when that was commercialized. And many people say it was My Adidas by Run DMC in the, I think it was the early 80s, when the moment that hip hop became marketable, when they saw that Adidas sales went up from that one single, and the way that it became fashionable for loads of people in the hood to wear Adidas trainers. And it then forever from then on, it became a thing to link either fashion or some kind of brand or some kind of way to commercialize the music. That's how you get like Nelly, Air Forces or things like that. So I don't think we've quite hit that moment with Afrobeats, but the moment that moment is tapped, you will see that more chasing the money than actually investing in the expansion or the I don't know, forward thinking cultural pushing of the sound itself. But there might be always people on the ground still pushing which way Afrobeats can go. It really is dependent, I guess, on how Nigeria gatekeeps and what's happening around it. But yeah, it is definitely a risk. And I think Chloe did raise a really good point there when it comes to Afrobeats.
Are you a Niger babe, know a Niger babe, or want to get to know one? If you've listened to the show and want to keep the conversation going, send us a message with your thoughts about the topic and we'll read out our favourite responses on the bonus episode at the end of this series. We'd love to hear from you.
Email info@thirdmagazine.co.uk. That's third with three I's. Or message us on the gram @thirdmagazine.
If you want to see some BTS, head to our TikTok where you can see what went down in the recording of this show.
You can also catch more from us on our website, thirdmagazine.co.uk.
If you're enjoying listening to us during this series, you might want to check out one of our earlier shows or mini-series. There's All My Half East Asian BFFs, where I chat with friends who share a white and East Asian mixed heritage.
And 20 single episodes to listen back to, covering rich topics such as dark tourism,
love and relationships,
cultural appropriation,
and cancel culture. And don't forget to help spread the word. Share the show with a friend, a colleague, your mum, or just rate and review us wherever you're listening.
All of the music you've been hearing on the show is by Sensei Lo. You can follow them on Instagram @sensei.lo.